Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Bill Ward. Bill is half Cree and half white from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Bill is a recovery activist, a motivational speaker, he is a change maker, and he's also the host of the UDR podcast, which stands for Uncover, Discover, and Recover. Bill has been sober for 9 years, and on this show, Bill courageously shares his story for those that are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Bill Ward. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hey, Ralph. I'm doing great, brother. How are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Yeah, my name's Bill Ward. I reside in the recovery capital of Canada, Calgary, Alberta. I'm half Cree, half white, and, I'm a podcaster, I'm a recovery activist. Since I've been in recovery, my whole life has changed, and to be real honest with you, Ralph, and listeners, I live my best life today, and it's all because I burnt it down once. So, kind of without going into my whole story, you know, grew up Indigenous around Calgary. Back in those days, I'm 52 next week. So back when I was a youngster, you know, there was not a lot of Indigenous people living in the city. And, I was subject to quite a bit of prejudice and had to fight my way through life, so to speak, literally. You know, I was a scrapper and I just had to stand up for myself for many, many years. And I found drugs and alcohol at a young age, probably 14, 15 years old. But I also remember around 14, 15, I was kind of contemplating, like, what's the purpose of life anyway? Like, supposed to be happy and fun. And, you know, there were some happy and fun moments. But life was hard, even as a youngster. And so I had a little bit of disdain for maybe how it was portrayed that life was going to be fun and easy. And at about 14, 15, I just kind of was like, what's the point? But then shortly after that, I found drugs and alcohol and, you know, life got better, man. And drugs and alcohol really enhanced my life. It enhanced my social life and allowed me to get out of myself and kind of expanded my life in a good way, I thought. You know, it wasn't long. By the time I was 17, I was pretty much full-blown alcoholic. My dad, who had been running a treatment center in Northern Alberta, asked me to go to treatment. I reluctantly went to treatment at 17, came out of treatment, you know, started drinking and using drugs again. Still scrapping and fighting my way through life. A few more years in and out of jail, looking at some pretty heavy jail time if I got convicted on some of the charges I was on. Luckily, I got through those and I didn't end up going to jail. And I get to 22 years old and my life's pretty much a mess. I said a prayer one day in a work truck up north when I was working up north. And I asked Creator to sober me up and Creator sobered me up. But that didn't mean that I had all my problems solved, because I realized the main problem for me centers in my mind. It's the way that I saw life. But I didn't know that at that point. So what I decided to do at 22 years old, because I just wanted to be happy, Ralph. Just wanted to be a happy person. And I didn't know how to do that. No one handed me the book of life and how to live life, and I just wasn't doing a good job at making it happen properly. So I kind of looked around the world and I saw that, you know, if you have money and you have stuff and things, and you can probably be pretty happy. And so I made a quest to get rich, in a short way to say it, to get rich. So I started a business. I started what I called Ward's Ground Thaw Services. My last name is Ward. So I built Ward's Ground Thaw Services, and I built this company over the next 15 years. By the time I was about 28, I was making $1 million a year. By the time I was 32, I was making $2 million a year. By the time I was about 35, 36, I was making about $3 million a year. I had three daughters and my wife, Shannon, and life was going good as far as the material world was concerned. My name and my status was kind of climbing the ladder here in Calgary. I was getting fairly well known as a construction business entity. But all through those years, my anger and a lot of my negative traits, they just wouldn't lay off. I could distract myself from these negative traits through running my business. But at the end of the day, these things were still there and they still had a grip on me. And anger was a big one. And I've learned really the root of anger is sadness. But at that time, I didn't know it. And a lot of these behaviors that I would act out in, I kind of rationalized and justified and just said, that's my personality. That's who I am. Accept it or don't. And I didn't realize that they could change. And nor did I really want them to change, because some of those negative traits really allowed me to navigate life and gain respect, so I thought. But really, I was just pushing people away and making my life worse. But I couldn't see that at the time. A little ways down the road here, I'm kind of losing purpose with my company, 15 years. And my brother, who I hadn't seen in quite a while, he had moved over to Winnipeg. And he was an addict and alcoholic himself. And he was missing. So me and my dad went out to Winnipeg to look for my brother. I ended up finding my brother, got him to safety, but one of the places that I had to go look for my brother was a crack house. And this guy that I didn't know had taken me to this crack house, and he said, I think I know who your brother is, and I'm going to take you there. And so I said, okay. And when I got into this crack house, I was offered a pipe and some crack, and they were asking me to smoke it to prove that I wasn't a cop. And I'd never done crack cocaine before, and I had no issues with proving I wasn't a cop. So I took the pipe and I took the crack, and I had a couple draws off of that pipe, and next thing you know, my life would change. And I had no idea it was going to change in that moment. I end up not finding my brother there, but like I said, we did find him the next day and got him to safety. I came back to Calgary and I couldn't get the thought of smoke and crack out of my mind. You know, in the program of recovery that I've kind of learned about, I have an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. When I look back at that exact experience, Ralph, as soon as I ingested that drug into my bloodstream, it set off what we call the allergy of the body and the obsession of my mind. And I come back to Calgary and I'm like, I want to do this. And I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I'm thinking to myself, Bill, you got a family, you got a business, you got all these things. And I would fire men that worked for me that smoked crack or did any hard drugs. And I was kind of really fighting with this idea that I needed some of this drug. Anyway, after a couple weeks of me fighting this off, I succumbed to the desire to smoke, and I got it and I found it and I smoked it. And then started my journey of self-destruction and lying and dishonesty and manipulation, and you know, so many negative things came out of that first at-home incident of me smoking crack. I started dishonoring my marriage, started dishonoring myself. I wasn't able to play with my children. I couldn't be the business owner that I wanted to be, And over the next 6 years, I systematically destroyed my life that I had built, spent my whole life building, and I destroyed it in 6 years. I made my family homeless. I was homeless. I was living in a trailer on my foreclosed property, lost my house that I'd paid for over a decade. My family, my wife Shannon and my three daughters, Lila, Lucy, and Jillian, were living in our old nanny's crawl space. And life got real, real dark for me. And then I'll say it like this. I was sitting in the rubble of what my life used to be. As I have all these coals and smoke and smoldering ashes around me of what was my old life. And I'm sitting in the middle of that with nothing. And I looked at myself and I said, who are you now? You're not the business owner. You don't have a house. You're not a father. You're not a husband. You're nothing. And in that moment, I realized my whole identity had been based in what I had and what people thought of me. But in the same sense, I needed that breaking point. I needed to have nothing. As I was sitting in my trailer one day and I was still smoking crack and didn't have my family, my dad would come and check on me every now and then. My dad was in a 12-step recovery program and had been for over 30-some years. And he really loved me, and so he'd come and check on me as I lived in that trailer with nothing. And one day I just asked my dad if he would take me to one of those meetings. I'd heard about the meetings, but I never really knew what they were. And my dad said, yeah, son, I would love to take you to one of those meetings. And I've been waiting your whole life for you to ask me that question. And then from that day, Ralph, I started my journey of recovery. And from that day, things didn't get better, I'll tell you that. They got worse, but at least I didn't use again. I detoxed in the rooms of 12-step fellowships over the next month. I sweated it out. I shared in meetings. I was angry and violent. I was just appreciative that I had my dad to hang on to. And then the people I met along the way, they actually seemed like they actually cared about my well-being. Which was really interesting because most of my life, if people cared, they wanted something from me. And these people didn't seem to want anything from me except for me to get well. And it took me a little while to kind of build some trust and believe that these people didn't want anything. And, you know, and I walked through that first year recovery and I just did what I was told. I'm the kind of guy that if I had another $20 gas in my gas tank or a new pair of shoes and, you know, $20 in my wallet, I may not be sitting here on this. I may be dead, or I may be still using. But luckily, the universe conspired to burn down my life so I had nothing left, so that I could start a new life. And although every part of me, except for a tiny part, wanted to die, there was that little tiny light in me that wanted to live. And I wanted to live for my daughters, but I was so broken. And I just started a journey, man. And now my 9-year birthday was actually yesterday. I'm 9 years sober as of yesterday.
Wow, congratulations, man.
Yeah, bro, my life is amazing today because of the darkness, man, and I was forced to change.
Man, what a story. You mentioned that culture has been a big part of your journey. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, Ralph, I realized this many years into my recovery, but I looked back. I spent my whole life trying to run from being Indian. I spent my whole life trying to not be Indigenous. I remember Indigenous people coming up to me and talking to me in my younger years and in my 20s and 30s, and I wouldn't give them the time of day. I didn't want to be associated with being First Nations. Because I was also indoctrinated with some of the same stigmas and beliefs that other people have today. I just thought Native people were drunks and they didn't work and they just got free money. And I was in that environment and I believed those beliefs. So in my subconscious, I didn't want to be tied to that. So I did everything in my subconscious power to try to be something different than that. And I never realized that till a few years into my recovery. But one of the things that was a game changer is in my first year, I went to my very first sweat lodge and I attended my very first powwow. And not because I just wanted to go and find my roots or my culture. I had been cracked open a little bit to open my mind to explore some things. And I was asked by a white friend of mine who helped at a lodge. He's a white guy. And he asked me to come to a sweat. And so I did. And I thought it was pretty amazing. So I went to some other sweat lodges and I started suffering in a good way. And at first I sweated out of ego. And I was just like in there like hotter. Let's get this done. And, you know, kind of like King Kong pounding on his chest, like, give me more heat. And one of my elders said, that's not what this is about. This is about humility. And he gave me a scolding and he taught me some serious lessons that day. And I heeded those lessons and it humbled me. And I went to my very first powwow in that first year too. It was the Sutina powwow. Sutina is a nation right on the edge of Calgary here where I live. And they have one of the biggest powwows in Western Canada in the summer. And because I'm brown, I was able to kind of get into the inner circle of the powwow where the drummers and the singers and the dancers were. So I used my brownness to get into the center. And I remember walking up and standing beside the powwow drummers. And I didn't really know what to expect. And then I just kind of stood there. But you got to realize I'm, you know, in my first year, I've been taught to pray, to learn how to meditate, to try to be present. So I'm changing a lot of things about myself. And prayer was a big one in that first year. So I go and stand beside the drummers and singers, and the first drum beat hits, and then they start drumming, and then they start singing. And I'm closing my eyes to try to be present and feel that moment. And in that moment, I felt my ancestors. I felt it in my body, in my being. And I was just like, holy, this is in me. And I knew in that moment I had to explore more of my roots of my culture. And I didn't know really where to start though. So that was like the beginning of my journey. And through this journey, Ralph, like, you know, 9 years later, I'm a fourth year sun dancer. I'm going to go fast again for my fifth or sixth time next month. I'm going to be in my fourth year sun dancing. I've been in Escapio at a couple lodges over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years here. I've attended numerous types of ceremonies, kettle ceremonies, puppy ceremonies, pipe ceremonies, Ioka ceremonies, just so many different ceremonies, whippies. I've just been so engulfed in my culture, and it's just been such a beautiful way of keeping me humble, allowing me to shed the old layers of pain and guilt and shame and trauma, and to connect with other people on the same journey, and just to bring a new light into my life. Like, so culture is it's a big pillar for me in my recovery today. And so as a recovery activist who wasn't part of his nature of being Native, I've really dug into that. And what I've learned, Ralph, is a lot of men and women in our communities and in the city that are First Nation or, you know, part Nation, they're disconnected just like I was. And so that's one of the messages that I bring to help our people try to find their truth of who they are and their identity as nation people.
What does your life look like now?
I have three daughters, my ex-wife. Two of my daughters still live with my ex-wife. My one daughter lives on her own with her new baby, which is my grandbaby, Briar Lynn. Our lives are much different. The financial stability that I had as a business owner is gone. But what that has done for all of my family is allowed us to look inside ourselves and really begin the journey of healing. So I don't look at what happened as a negative. I look at it as a positive, because without me burning my life down, I never would have found the path of healing that I found. Mind you, there's still a little guilt and shame in me for burning down and affecting so many people's lives in a seemingly negative way. But when I say seemingly negative, it only seems negative. So with my daughters and my ex-wife, they're also on their journey of healing. So they're able to look inside based on all the events that have happened. So in that process, we've developed like real good relationships. Fairly vulnerable, absence of pride, a lot of truth and honesty. We can speak to each other. And I get along really good with my ex-wife and all my daughters. And of course, there's always work to be done, but that's a really beautiful thing. I'm not the tyrant and the dominator like I used to be in the family where everyone walked on eggshells when I spoke. I'm just a worker among workers now. I'm one of the family. And of course, there's still subconscious overlapping patterns that still exist that haven't been fully ironed out yet from them, maybe myself as well. But it's a work in progress down the road of healing. About 3 or 4 years into my journey of recovery, the only thing I really wanted back was my career. I wanted to get back making money and do things and set myself up for a successful life, for financially and materially. And through the process of helping so many people in those early years, addicts and alcoholics primarily, something changed inside of me. And in that third or fourth year, I can't remember exactly, I had a big shift. And even though I got my career back, I was making $130,000 as director of a small corporation in Calgary. I sat at my desk and I realized one day it hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't want to do this anymore. And the only thing I ever wanted to do was get my career back. So the amount of fear that ran through my body and my being in that moment, realizing I couldn't sell my soul for this money or this status anymore, it was really scary. But because I had built such a good relationship with God, I was able to talk to God about it and talk to my Creator. And because I didn't believe in a God in my early years of recovery, because I grew up Catholic and didn't really like the word God, and I used to pray to my grandmother, my dead grandmother. Her name was Margaret. So this one day, as I was on lunch, I started talking to my grandmother Margaret as I pulled over my car, new car I just got. And I asked her, I said, "Grandma, I don't want to do this job anymore, and you know that." And I said, "I'm so scared to quit and go help addicts and alcoholics, but that's what I want to do. And it's not going to pay the bills. I have too much child support to pay." I was paying $2,100 a month at that point. My rent was $1,700. And then I had to live and pay other bills. I needed about $4,000 or $5,000 a month. And I was just really, really scared. But I knew I couldn't do this job anymore. And so my grandmother spoke to me that day and she said, "Billy, it doesn't matter if there's money involved. That's what you do. You go help. You go help people." So 2 weeks later, I quit my job. I was on unemployment insurance and I just started really trusting Creator and praying and asking Him to show me what direction He wanted me to go and what step I should take. And now we're like 4 or 5 years later here, Ralph. What my life looks like today is with Creator as the guide of my life, I've never went without. There's never been a shortage of people to help. So I helped a lot of people over these years. That's how I've accumulated like so many hours of service in helping. And it's transformed my whole life. And it's allowed me to heal. And because I learned a lot of hard lessons, like not to take money as the be-all of end-all and not to use women and to really respect women and respect human beings and quit treating people by their labels, but treat them as human beings, every one of them. And sacrificing my own selfish desires of sex and lust and emotional security for the betterment of other people, it's paid off. And so now what I do today is I teach people that this path is possible and it takes work. And here's what it takes. You got to look within yourself. You got to sacrifice certain things. You got to look at yourself. You got to pull out pen and paper. You got to write down the things that you're doing to make your life worse. Maybe you can write out who you want to be. And how do you get there? Well, it's a journey, man. And so I go around and I speak in First Nations communities on how to inspire people to take personal responsibility for their own position in life and what it takes to look within. And so I've been called by nations and recovery centers, and I travel around. I also have been asked by Creator to go to Drumheller Institution. It's a penitentiary in Alberta. And I go there twice a week, and I help the First Nation inmates with the exact same thing I just described. Try to help them come out of jail and live a better life, more meaningful and productive life. But they're not going to unless they change and take responsibility for what they've done and who they are and who they can be. And I have a recovery mentorship program I implemented at a Shuswap Indian Band. They work with me closely, and I try to help community members, and I work autonomously. So I go into community twice, 2 days a week, and I just work under the radar, and I just meet people, and I plant seeds of recovery and of self-growth and, you know, looking at ourselves. And so a lot of people want to meet me while I'm there. So I just drive around. I have breakfast and coffee and try to inspire people. And sometimes I just have to be there to listen, because people just want to be heard. And so I do a lot of that. I'm building programs. I go to a lot of 12-step fellowship meetings. I go to drum circles. I've learned how to sing 12, maybe 15 songs in language. I've been learning how to, I became a pipe carrier, so I'm learning about pipe and culture and building First Nations cultural programs. And I just dedicate my life to service, Ralph. And what's happened is the money has come. I don't worry about money today. I don't worry about my relationships, because as long as Creator's my number one and I keep looking within, all my other relationships seem to work out. And what's happened is people want what I have. So they ask me, how do I get what you have? And I'll say, well, I'll show you what I've done. And I worked with enough people now one-on-one to know that whatever I'm teaching is working, because if the person's really willing to do what I've done and I ask them to do, their life's changed dramatically, just like mine has. So I just dedicate my life to service. And when I'm asked to help somewhere, if I have a time slot open, then it's theirs. And like today, it's yours. So in a nutshell, bro, that's pretty much where it's at.
That's amazing. Bill, I appreciate you coming on and you know, sharing your story.
Okay, and thank you, Ralph.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project, Saturdays at 3 p.m., Sundays at 8 p.m. on KSKO, serving the western interior of Alaska for more than four decades. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.